slid her visor up and clomped to the cockpit. Trudy Hall was sitting in the right-hand seat, looking small, almost elfin in only her coveralls. Stacy checked out the control panel and began to power up the wheel motors. Jamie and Dex stood behind the two women. Both men had slid up their visors and taken off their gloves. "Are you sure its wheels are in neutral?" Trumbull asked. Jamie nodded inside his helmet. "All drive wheels go to neutral once the power's off, unless they're actively set in gear." "Or locked in parking mode," Dex added. "They're not locked," Jamie insisted. "I was there. We didn't lock the wheels when we fell into the dust. Just the opposite. We tried to back out of the crater." "Then they might be set in reverse." "They're in neutral," Jamie insisted. Trumbull's glance slid from Jamie to Dezhurova, sitting in the pilot seat with her back to them. "I sure wish we could have checked the wheel settings," he muttered. "Not possible," Stacy said from her chair. "Not unless we run a power line to the old rover and boot up her electrical systems."
"Maybe we ought to do that," Trumbull said.
"Let's see if we can tow her without getting into that kind of work," Jamie said. "Spooling up," Dezhurova muttered, engaging the drive motors. Jamie could not see her head, only the top of her gleaming white helmet. "Take it easy now," said Trumbull.
"Be quiet, Dex," she snapped. "I know what I'm doing."
Dex went silent. Jamie, beside him, stared straight ahead at the curved rear end of the old rover looming 10 meters in front of the windshield. The motors whined as Dezhurova began to slowly back the rover. The tether cable stretched taut.
"Come, come, my sweet one,"
Dezhurova coaxed gently in a whisper Jamie could barely hear. Then she lapsed into Russian, cooing softly, tenderly. Standing behind Trudy's seat, Jamie marveled at the cool, gentle, almost motherly softness of Stacy's whispered urgings. Is this the same woman who was swearing like a biker at a screwdriver just a couple of hours ago? The rover rocked slightly, and Jamie grabbed the back of Hall's chair for support. The drive motors whined louder. Jamie thought he smelled something burning.
"Come, baby," Dezhurova cooed.
Trumbull muttered,
"It's not going." The rover lurched again, and Jamie reached out with his free hand to hold on to Trumbull.
Dex grappled for Jamie's arm clumsily, rocking backwards in his hard suit and nearly tumbling over.
"Here she comes!" Dezhurova shouted.
The rounded end of the old rover trundled toward them in slow motion, bigger, bigger.
"Hang on!"
The tail of the old vehicle thumped against the projecting winch drum on the nose of their rover hard enough to rock Jamie against the cockpit's rear bulkhead. Both vehicles stopped. For a long moment, none of them said anything. Then Trudy Hall giggled and declared,
"Whiplash! Where's the nearest lawyer?"
They all laughed, shakily. "I guess the old bird's wheels are in neutral," Trumbull admitted.
"I guess they are," said Dezhurova.
Jamie noticed that she locked her rover's wheels in park before she pushed herself up from the pilot's chair.
"I have to pee," she announced cheerfully.
Over dinner, they planned how they would tow the old rover up to the canyon rim. As usual, the two women sat on one of the lower bunks, while Jamie and Trumbull sat side by side on the other.
"Why not bring it all the way back to the base?" Trumbull urged. "Cuts into our fuel reserves," Dezhurova said, looking across the fold-out table to Jamie.
"Not by that much," Trumbull countered. Jamie said, "Stacy, you'll have to make the call as far as safety is concerned. I need to know exactly how much of our fuel the tow job would eat up."
"I can give you an estimate, but I don't know exactly how much fuel we'll consume towing the beast."
"Your best estimate, then," Jamie said. "We'll want the rover at the base sooner or later," Trumbull went on. "Might as well bring it along with us."
"If we can," said Jamie.
"Right, but I'm willing to bet that we can do it with no strain. We'll see."
"Yes, Daddy," Dex kidded.
After dinner, they put away the table and folded down the upper bunks. Trumbull took his turn in the lav, while the two women went up to the cockpit together. Jamie squatted on his bunk, opened his laptop, and checked in with the base. Rodriguez was at the comm desk.
"Did you get the imagery I sent last night?" he asked, his beefy face frowning with concern.
Yes, I just haven't had a chance to go over it. Doesn't show much. The SOAR plane's not such a good platform for the kind of data you want.
Sitting cross-legged on his bunk, Jamie shrugged. It's all we've got for now.
Yeah, right.
He went through the day's report with Rodriguez. Possum Craig had the drill rig running again. Fuchida was plotting out his excursion to Olympus Mons. Rodriguez himself was beginning to assemble the manned rocket plane that would carry him and the biologist to the top of the tallest mountain in the solar system. Jamie listened, watched inventory lists flicker down his screen, waited patiently until he heard himself ask, "What's Shekhtar been doing?"
"Vijay.
She's tending Fuchida's garden and looking after the bugs that Possum's drill is bringing up. Want to talk with her?"
"Sure, yes."
Trumbull came back from the lavatory and ducked low enough to grin at Jamie.
"Don't stay up too late now, Chief. Big day tomorrow."
"Right," Jamie said. He reached for the earplug attachment to his laptop and pressed it into his ear, then pulled its microphone arm down until the pin mic was almost touching his lips. As Trumbull swung up on the top bunk, Rodriguez's face on the screen was replaced by Vijay Shekhtar's. She seemed to glisten, as if her skin had been oiled. Jamie thought again how much fun it would be to massage her with pungent balms. She smiled and talked easily enough, answered Jamie's questions about the iron-eating bacteria that Craig's drill rig was now pulling up from several kilometers below the surface.
"They are magnetically active," she reported. "They align themselves with magnetic fields."
"Must be from the iron they ingest," Jamie guessed.
"Yes, but what advantage does that give them? Mars's magnetic field is so weak that I can't see how it helps them to survive."
"Maybe it doesn't," Jamie said. "Maybe it's just incidental." She looked doubtful.
"Or maybe Mars had a much stronger field once," he suggested, "and the field has dissipated over time."
"That could be," Vijay said thoughtfully.
Then she brightened.
"They're reproducing quite nicely in culture. They fish in every hour, on average."
"In ambient conditions?"
"Mitsuo's rigged a special high-pressure box for them," she answered. "They've got to be kept in total darkness. Light kills them."
"What about heat?" Her eyes flashed.
"Oh, they're thermophiles, all right. At 80 degrees, they switch from fissioning to conjugation. You ought to see them, Jamie. The busy little buggers mate like rabbits."
"Just what we need," Jamie murmured. "Sex-crazed bacteria."
"They're just like most men," Vijay said, smiling brightly. "They only do it in the dark, and under great pressure."
"Australian men, you mean," he said.
"Some Yanks, too."
He had no reply for that one. Still smiling, Vijay asked,
"And how are you getting along?"
Jamie felt grateful for the change in subject. He returned to the safety of the work they were doing. As he told her about pulling the old rover out of the sand, he reminded himself that this very desirable woman could destroy this expedition if she had a mind to. He remembered Ilona Malater, who decided that she would be the resident sex therapist for the first expedition. She caused tensions that became almost unbearable, particularly among the Russians. Vijay was different, younger for one thing, and she seemed to be laughing at some private inner joke. She admitted to having a wicked sense of humor, but Jamie felt that she was professional enough to keep it and her other passions under control. "She'd better," he said to himself. Then a voice in his mind asked, "What if she doesn't? What are you going to do about it?" Imagery. Tomas Rodriguez drummed his fingers absently against the desktop, in rhythm to the trumpets and strings of the mariachi CD he was listening to while he squinted hard at the computer's display screen. He was trying to force some sense out of what the SOAR plane's cameras showed. It was well past midnight. He was sitting alone in the dome's geology lab, surrounded by shelves laden with red pitted rocks and plastic containers of rusty red soil. The dome was dark and quiet. He kept the music low, just enough to keep him company while everyone else slept. Rodriguez desperately wanted to see what Jamie Waterman thought he had seen.
an artificial structure built into a niche two-thirds of the way up the steep, rugged cliff of Tithonium Chasma's northern face.